friends, and welcome back to Like Anime, a podcast where we talk about anime. My name's George, and with me is Tony.
My name's Tony, and with me is George.
Hi, I'm George. I think I said that already.
Hi, I'm Tony. I think I said that already.
We are back. This is episode 33. We are rounding out, for the most part, spring 2021. Couple shows continuing.
Couple of Klingons.
Yes.
Into next season. But yeah, for the most part, we're done.
That's right. And in the spirit of that, we are going to close out four if you count Flying Witch, but it's not a currently running show.
Or five if you count all the shows.
That's true.
What
are
you skipping?
To Your Eternity. I'm just saying we're going to close
out.
Oh,
right. Yeah. You're right.
We're about to conclude.
I forgot that To Your Eternity, this is not a final episode.
Feels like the end.
Whew. Yeah.
But we'll get to that. But yeah, I'm excited. How are you feeling about ending this, for the most part, ending this spring season?
Pretty good. It's ended pretty well. There have been a few episodes that are a few shows that haven't ended how I would have envisioned them, or I don't know. We'll get to that. It's really just the one show.
Yeah.
Which I called weeks ago. So, you know, whatever. I still watched the whole thing, so I guess it achieved its achievement.
Yeah, it got you to watch. That's all they care about. They don't care if you liked it.
Yeah, that's probably true.
All right. Well, we shall start on a very high note.
Mm.
But regrettably, we have to say goodbye to Odd Taxi.
Mm. Yes.
My personal favorite show of this season.
How is it now?
Contender.
Okay.
Well, no, favorite show of this season. I'll go out and say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right, for sure. Right. After seeing this episode, Yeah.
It was a good twist. That's for sure.
Yeah. Damn good.
I would have expected maybe Megalobox to be more of a contender in that realm, but
oh yes. I mean, Megalobox is number 2, of course.
Oh, okay.
And we'll get to that after
this. I thought they might have been flipped.
Okay. And yeah. I think they were flipped up until this ending. But yeah, we'll get to that. I was saying Odd Taxi is a contender for best show of the year. Granted, we're not that far into it, and I still need to catch up on some shows from last season.
Oh, the year. You're not even saying for the season. You're saying for the whole year?
Oh, yeah. I'm saying this will probably be in my top 5 of the year.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and maybe it might be. I don't know. Wonder Egg is up there as well. But
yeah, we still got to watch that last episode and see. But
yeah, that came out this week for anyone listening.
Yep.
But yeah, without further ado, let's jump into it.
Odd Taxi. So this twist I was not expecting, but it does explain a lot of questions that I've had throughout the whole season, in fact, just with this one little thing.
And even minor things.
So yeah. Well, it's mostly the minor things that always like sort of stick in my craw and like, are like, wait a second, that lady's a dog and she has a pet dog. That doesn't make any sense.
What is this normal cat in the street doing?
Yeah. And then he almost hits a cat who drops his phone, right? Tanaka's a cat, right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Cat and cat, dog and dog. Like it's,
He, as we learn, spoilers. Yes. Spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
Of
super,
course.
Super spoilers, of course.
But yeah, we learn that Odokawa, up until the finale of this, you know, of what happens in this episode, we learn that he can't really tell the difference between an animal and a human.
So we've been seeing the whole season, like all of the characters are anthropomorphized animals.
Yeah.
And then occasionally we've seen animals that aren't anthropomorphized, which was confusing for me and always annoyed me, like on a level that I couldn't quite reach.
It just seemed like counter to what the show was trying to do without knowing what the twist was.
And then, in this episode, it's revealed that because of the traumatic events of Odokawa's past, he lost the ability to recognize humans as humans. He basically envisioned everyone as sort of an animal version of themselves. So these anthropomorphic animals that we've been seeing the whole time are actually humans that just have some characteristic or trait that reminds Odokawa of a certain animal species. And then he assigns them as that and sees them as that. So Goriki is just a guy with a crazy beard.
Yeah. It's got kind of a longer face, but yeah, he's, Yeah.
Yeah. And everyone. It's true for it goes like, down everyone line. That we've met. Yeah. It's sort of a crazy, I want to say mind fuck. I try and avoid, you know, language like that. But in this case, I think it's appropriate.
Well, it is an insane, and in a good way, it's an insane reveal because it calls into question everything that we have seen oh, yeah. in this show.
It's one of those things that makes you want to rewatch the whole show and look for all those little clues that have there. They've been there the whole time.
Yep.
Like the animals, the things that stuck with me was the animals that weren't anthropomorphized, right? Mm-hmm. That was the thing that stuck with me. But I'll bet there's like several other things that that indicate that this is what's going to happen. It's so well written and well constructed.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't 100%.
Imagine that those things aren't there.
Yeah, and I think if we do rewatch it at some point, you might have to comment on it just a little bit. But yeah, I guess to dig into the episode. Not to spend too much time on it, but so many things culminate. Gariki, learns, the ailment that Odakawa has that, mm-hmm. We just talked about. And it's called visual agnosia.
Oh, you wrote things down.
And I didn't make many notes, actually. I made very few notes. But I did read a little bit about visual agnosia, and it's kind of interesting. Like, it really does fit. It tends to affect... older adults who aren't adolescents who had an accident in the past, so it seems to affect people as they mature more, and so Odakawa fits that bill. But then they tie together his childhood growing up. His mother was very emotional and present but not really there for him,
and also somewhat abusive,
abusive. And his dad was very much like out of the picture, except he would show up every now and then. He had a mistress, a lot of alcoholism and adultery, and so Odakawa just kind of needed,
and Odakawa was a fat kid. He mentions that several times,
so yeah, I that's think true you yeah have to mention they probably that. Got picked on. We didn't see a lot of that.
He said he did, so
yeah,
I believe him.
Yeah, I do too. But we get a little bit of this flashback showing, just kind of his perspective. And they do it in such a way where Odakawa as a child is silhouetted. We don't really see, that he looks like a human before they reveal.
He's somewhat more human-shaped than walrus-shaped.
Yeah, but that's true.
But yes, he's silhouetted throughout, so we don't actually see his face.
Yeah. And they frame the mom in such a way, like at first, that you don't see her, but then there is a shot when they're in the car, which is near the end of this backstory, where you kind of see her part of her face, and it's just a human face, and it's telling. But anyway, he had a love of animals, and I think he, as a child, poured himself into his love of animals, and so that it ties together why he started picturing people's animals. He talks about how he couldn't look another human in the eye. It was, hard to do. And so,
but he could stare in the eyes of an animal. Like, he used to visit the zoo a lot. And he was saying he could stare into the eyes of an animal all day, basically.
It sounds like his dad would just take him to the zoo, like drop him off and like leave him there.
His dad would go to visit his mistress and would basically take Odo to the zoo, drop him off, leave him there all day while he had his time with his mistress, and then pick him back up and bring him home, apparently.
Yeah. And he would just stare at the animals.
Sort of after his mother sort of lost it, and I don't know if she kicked him out, or I don't know. I can't remember exactly what it was, but that was what he said.
But it was just nice. It was a nice, it was a dark backstory, but it explained everything involving him. Especially like his which he had described, his keen sense of recognizing someone. And so it was like if he could identify them as a certain animal, then they would stick out in his mind, knowing this now.
Right.
Yeah. But if they weren't distinct enough, it was like whatever. But he had said before, as long as he sees their face, he can, remember them. I imagine that plays in somehow. But there's another aspect of hand it over to you, but this whole car chase culminates.
Yes.
And also ties a bunch of stuff together.
Yeah, so this car chase was kind of weird and sort of didn't make sense in some ways, I guess. But we've got, what's his name? Hedgehog. He's not a hedgehog.
Yano.
Yeah, Yano.
And his henchmen.
Yano and his henchmen have stolen a police car
mm-hmm.
from the elder of the brothers.
Yeah, Daimon, yeah.
Yeah. And are chasing Odo, and Odo's fleeing from them. But then more and more police cars are joining this chase.
Yeah.
And I assumed at first that, like, they were chasing Yano, but it seemed like they were just joining the chase because they saw a police car chasing a car, and they were all essentially chasing Odo. It sort of didn't make sense.
I think it was a little bit of both, because clearly they must have been, an APB about this stolen cop car.
You would think, but and the Daimon brothers are in one of those cars that are chasing them as well. But I don't know, the way it plays out is sort of weird in that regard, because the Yano and his henchmen keep like smashing into Odo's car, trying to drive him off the road or crash him or whatever. But none of the police cars ever do anything to stop Yano's car, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know, maybe a bit of confusion among the police there or something. I don't know exactly what it was.
And they kind of joined near the tail end of that chase.
It's like slowly adding on more and more and more.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. To right by the end, there's a bunch of them.
Until they get to the unfinished bridge.
Yes. Yeah. And clearly that was, all leading to this,
Right.
So Yano is, driving the cop car into Odo's cab. It causes the trunk to unlatch and open. And that's
where all the money is.
That's where all the money is. And so it's a pretty glorious scene. It also sets up not everyone, but like all these other characters who haven't been resolved.
It creates a nice central event to sort of tie all of their positions together, sort of surrounding this central event, right?
And it establishes that they're all kind of in their own space. They're not all gathered together, but they're all near the water. They're all overlooking the water, kind of contemplating things. You got Rui, the lead singer of Mystery Kiss. You got Ichimura, the calico cat, and you got
she's not a calico cat anymore, but
she's not,
right? Because they're all humans now.
Oh, that's true. But I'm just saying, the representation. You son of a gun.
It just reminded me of the picture of Tanaka standing on the bridge, like he's on a bridge, contemplating suicide, it seems like, right? But
yeah,
he's clearly Tanaka, but he's clearly not a cat. He's human, but we recognize him.
It's amazing.
Like the ability to recognize, like there were a few that I didn't immediately recognize, and I was like, wait, who is that? And then they would say something and I would be like, oh, okay, now I know who that is.
But most of them,
but yeah, a lot of them are just like spot on human representations of these anthropomorphic animals that we've been watching the whole season, right?
Yeah.
Like what you would imagine they would look like if they were human, essentially. Yeah.
So as Odokawa's car is skyrocketing off of, ramped off of this unfinished bridge.
Yeah.
Yano slams on the brakes and all the cops stop.
Yeah.
But Odo goes over the bridge. All the money is flying out and he's flying in front of a giant full moon. Reminiscent of E.T., which I'm a big fan of. Yeah. I don't know what the connection is there, but
I thought the same thing, that maybe they were trying to reference that in some way. I don't know what.
Yeah, what that would.
What more than just the visual reference it was, but
yeah. But it was really pretty, and it wasn't entire. It wasn't framed entirely like E.T., but same kind of idea. Yeah. And as we said, all these people are kind of onlooking, but at this point we're just seeing them as animals. But in the moment, it's kind of this slow motion shot. We hear Goriki telling Shirakawa about what he learned about this mental illness, and it's kind of all unfolding. And so it ends with Shirakawa, Odokawa, going into the ocean, and also everyone. There's so many people. There's so many things to tie everything in together. But the Homo sapiens, the comedy troupe, are there, and are witnessing this and yada yada. But anyway, Shirakawa saves him, and then as he's in the ambulance, we start to see what we were just hinting at, what these people actually look like. We're kind of coming out. I don't know if it's supposed to signify that Odokawa is now seeing people as they really are, or it's just lifting the veil because we know, what his, they kind of hinted at, like, he was seeing them.
No, I think it's the way he's seeing them.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're seeing them the way he sees them.
So it's like one car accident caused it and the other one fixes it. I don't know how that works.
I guess, but I kind of forgot, because the Tanaka scene, maybe we don't see him before Odo's pulled out of the water.
Yeah, maybe not.
Because definitely when Odo goes into the water, and as he's going towards the bottom of this bay or whatever it is, he's still a walrus.
Yeah. And Shirakawa is still an alpaca as she's swimming down to save him.
Yes.
But then after it cuts from there, then...
After he's pulled out, then everyone's human.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So, I mean, it is kind of like coming full circle with the car accidents. Probably not a advisable treatment for anyone suffering from this. But in his case, it seemed to jumble his brain enough to cause him to see people for who they really are.
Yeah, and he reveals more about the past that we had. Like, okay, so I speculated at one point that Odo was a serial killer and had killed his parents, right? Mm. That is not the case, as it turns out.
I'm glad.
But I don't know. Like, there was always that weird dark thing. Oh, and then the thing in the closet. And that's a whole other thing, too.
Well, that I love, too, because... just that he can't tell the
difference. He couldn't tell the difference. Yeah.
It was literally, and
it was just a normal cat. There was a cat in his closet.
There's a cat in there. And he wasn't even sure himself. He came home being like, oh God, what's in my closet? And he's like, oh, it actually is a cat.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was a black cat, similar to the girl that died from Mystery Kiss and the replacement girl as well. And there's so much. God, just like,
so much.
I feel like you should just watch the show. The entirety of the show.
I mean,
from
we need
beginning
to
end.
It.
And then watch it again. And if you've listened this far, you're already spoiled on what the ending is. And
it's like you've already watched it once.
I'm sorry, but it's absolutely worth a watch for sure.
And I love what you pointed out, because that not across my mind with Tanaka when Odakawa almost runs him over and he drops his phone. He might have just seen him as a cat. He might have just been like, it's just a cat in the road, like whatever. Like, I'm not trying to hit a cat, but I'm in a hurry.
Well, yeah, but there was a cat that he almost hit that ran out of the way.
Yeah.
And then Tanaka coming from the other side was maybe just another cat, I guess. Yeah.
So it's kind of a fun, that's a fun wrinkle. No, it's a great, I love a show or a movie that has a roadmap.
It'd be very weird. Like, you can't tell the difference until they speak English to you. Like,
yeah, until they
literally look the same as like a normal cat. Like, you've got the one that goes meow, and you've got the one that says, "Hey, dude, what's up?" But they look identical. That's weird.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah,
it's tricky.
Huh.
I guess I don't know. I just love a story that has a roadmap and they stick to it. Like, we don't need more Odd Taxi. This is. I mean, if they do make more, I'll have to trust that they have another great idea to continue the story, but in this world we live in with reboots and sequels and constantly milking things.
I mean, there's enough left open with the character relationships in this that they could very easily make one where they're all just humans or whatever.
Yeah, you could do something. You'd have to change the entire show.
I don't know how interesting it would be, but yeah, it would be a very different show from this. Yeah.
Shirakawa was great. She saved him in the end. I always liked her. And I was happy to learn that there wasn't some dark, darker thing about her.
They never did address that specific question, though.
Issue we had. Yeah. How did she know? Yeah. So that's a cinema sin. Like, I care about that, but that is one, at least one detail that is questionable. Like, how did she know that they were in this abandoned lot? But I don't know. Maybe if we rewatch it, there's something we missed.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. There's enough that there might be something for sure. Anyway,
Dobu, so many more stuff, but Dobu lives.
Yeah, so much more.
And he's after he recovers, he'll be arrested. So we don't get like a full resolution of all these characters. There's so many, but there is a nice bow on the end of it.
But we touch on each one of them.
Yeah,
like we see Hippo Boy, Hippo Kid.
Yeah, Hippo Kid, and he's like...
Do we see him humanoid?
I don't remember.
I only remember seeing him...
He might have been one of the ones where it was like, who is that?
Yeah, I don't remember. But yeah, we see everybody. Literally every character is displayed here. And there's, again, there's so much like little intricate story details that we could go into and talk about for another 20 minutes. But we're...
We've
basically been talking about it for 20 minutes already.
Yep.
So It's a great show. If you did not watch it, watch it. It's definitely worth a watch. And like I say, I'm probably going to rewatch it because there's like with this big reveal at the end, it makes it really interesting to watch and look for those little things. And there's all the little things that we even noticed the first time, like the eraser, which eventually paid off.
Oh God. So well,
so many things. There's so much, so well written, so well constructed.
And okay. We have to talk about actually before we have, there's something we haven't brought up that we have to talk about. What is her name? Yuki.
Yuki, the black cat. Yeah.
Yes. Who replaced Mitsuya.
Yeah.
She killed
Mitsuya. Yeah.
And at the very end of this, she gets in Odakawa's cab. When she's on the phone with her mom and she's like, says some kind of shady stuff.
Yeah.
But it led me to believe that she wants to kill Odakawa.
And of course, right before that, we saw a scene of Odakawa talking to someone about, wait, so the person that I drove on that night was, and then the scene cuts off, right?
Cuts off.
Because it turns out the person that he drove was Yuki. He drove Yuki to the
not
place.
Mitsuya.
Right.
Yeah. And they look so similar that.
But he could tell the difference.
Yeah.
But
he did notice a difference.
He knew that it was the Karage girl that he drove there, but he didn't realize the connection to that because at first he thought the Karage girl, the fried chicken. Karage.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
I know, but I should explain it for anyone that doesn't. So the girl who likes the fried chicken, he knows that it's the same girl, but prior to this, he hadn't yet realized that the girl who likes fried chicken wasn't the original member of Mystery Kiss, right? And this is sort of when he realizes that and says, oh, so that girl that I drove that night. So the footage that they wanted was of Yuki. Yuki, not of Mitsuya, because Mitsuya also took a cab there.
Yeah,
but it wasn't Odo's cab.
Yes. But it was
again so much. There's so
it's
much.
It's so layered.
Just watch the show.
And okay, and then as this is,
it's got more things. Just saying, just watch the show isn't enough.
I know. And it ends on that cliffhanger. So contrary to what I was just saying, that it doesn't need more. I suppose it does kind of leave it open for more, but I still stand by that this is perfect to end it with a little.
It was
that little layer of.
It was a little open sting, you know, that they were doing there. Yeah,
which is nice. It's a classy move. But she's holding a pen. It almost looks like a Sailor Moon.
And that was another reason I wanted to rewatch the whole show is because like that must be something that we've seen before.
It has
I
to
think.
Be. I went back to the episode where we got a lot of Rui's backstory because I thought maybe it would be in there because we learned a lot more about Mitsuya and stuff, but I didn't. I was just kind of skipping through it. I didn't rewatch the whole thing.
I was so the thing when I saw the fancy pen thing, it led me back to thinking of Tanaka and like his friends who collected erasers, and he did say something about the girls. Maybe collecting pens. I don't remember.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yeah, I don't remember that. But yeah, maybe that's an episode to revisit.
He did say something about like the girls.
That'd be interesting.
Had their own thing, but the boys were about collecting these different erasers, right?
Yeah.
And so then that, so Tanaka and Yuki maybe went to the same school or
and
something like that.
Somehow.
And like, I don't know. Yeah. So it's probably back there somewhere. I feel there's this little inkling in my head that says that it was there somewhere.
And I was reminded of it when you brought up the eraser because we had forgotten about the eraser from the first episode. And we had a listener point that out to us. And
right.
Like, oh yeah. Yep. Once again, we had to touch on that Yuki stuff. I forgot to make a note about it. But it was pretty good ending, a sting, cliffhanger, as you said.
Yeah.
But yeah, good show.
Yeah. It's so intricately detailed in every way. Stories, I mean, the story, the characters, like everything. Like,
yeah. The music fits the aesthetic and everything. Yeah. It's great. It's great.
And the twist is certainly unexpected, but when it happens, you're not like, what? Oh, they're going to Bob Newhart us? Like, oh, it was all just a dream? No, because it's not what it feels like. It was, I think there was enough motivation there for it that when it happens, you're like, mm-hmm. oh, like well, you feel like you should have known that. There's no way you could have. Well, but you feel like you should have known it.
We kept seeing these CT scans of Odokawa's brain.
Oh, right.
So we knew there was some mental, you know, cognitive issue.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, that's so brilliant.
There's no way you would piece it together from anything that we had seen prior to this episode.
Yeah. Like the entire...
I think it would be impossible to piece it together from that.
The entire visual conceit of the show was, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
Obliterated.
Was the thing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And it's so good. It's such a great reveal.
All of the character design was the MacGuffin of this show.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. How do you see that coming?
Crazy.
And for anyone who's kind of turned off to these types of shows because of furry fandom, you know, just ruining it.
I hadn't even thought of
this
that.
This has a wrinkle of, you know, of completely turning that on its head. So it's, you know.
Yeah, they're not furries. Odokawa is just otherkin, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah,
he just sort of, I don't know.
He's kind of like the ultimate furry, where he prefers animals over humans.
Well, I mean, he even says like he always wanted to be a walrus or something like that, or you know, like he felt like he was a walrus, which is anyway, we don't need to go into the other
medically diagnosed furry.
Right, yeah. All right. Well, let's move on to Megalobox 2 Nomad. This is the final episode of this as well.
What'd you think of this finale?
I was not blown away. It was, it was acceptable. It was passable. I wish they'd wrapped more things up. You know, like I feel like the relationship between, the kid's name?
Sachio.
Yeah. I wish like the Sachio and Joe thing had been more resolved than it was.
I disagree.
I'm completely talking out of my ass because I did not watch this. But I'm curious to see how close I got.
I disagree with your assessment
that you just
ad-libbed. I mean, I already said Odd Taxi is my favorite show of the season. This is a close second. It's still really good. So I don't mean to, it's no slight against Megalobox, but we finally get to the fight in this, between Mac and Joe. And it's so great because it's, you know, before they start, you know, they kind of, you know, bump gloves and they kind of have, I forget what they say, but they have this heartfelt kind of back and forth. You know, it's nothing about, you know, fighting or their motivation there. It's just, you know, a very jovial, friendly exchange. And it's just so cool to have that camaraderie and that respect, you know, between your opponents. So I just love that on its face. But we get the fight, and you know, it's one of those things where it's not a super drawn out fight, but it goes, you know, it's a decent amount of time. It's a satisfying amount of time, and the focus really isn't the fight. But you know, we have Joe kind of having the edge, and then Mac kind of has the edge, and it kind of goes back and forth. But it ultimately ends the fight itself, which I guess I should preface this with something else. So we keep cutting back and forth between the fight and Yukiko, who is the she's the head of the Shirato Corporation, mm-hmm. which is kind of the bad corporation in the first season,
right?
And she's kind of come around, and she finally has evidence that the Roscoe Corporation, which you know designed the BES medical gear technology. She finally has hard evidence that there are severe side effects and that this information has been a whole cover-up by... I was getting his name wrong. His name is Sakuma, not Sakama. Sakama, it's Sakuma. I was saying it wrong.
Okay.
but anyway, so I liked how they did it because they keep cutting back and forth to them being in their skybox or whatever, watching the fight. And Sakuma is like all bummed out, you know, because she's... Yukiko's not like sitting down. She's like got her arms crossed, leaning against a wall. And essentially the whole purpose of it is she's doing that whole like, you know, Bond villain thing where you explain like, you know, how you have them in a trap. And so she's telling him, you know, I know everything that you did. This girl that works for you, which was a past student of Yukiko's brother, who now has been, for the last 5 years, has been a professor at a university. He got to her, and she, you know, she had a moral dilemma about what was going on and what they were covering up. And so she's the one that leaked this information, outside of Roscoe to, Yukiko. And, and so Yukiko is essentially laying all this out to him. And his response is, you know, she's like, I'm going to go public, you know, and you'll have to take the fall. I will also take the fall. And he's like, well, you know, this is going to ruin both of us. And so this leads to her wanting to cut a deal with him to hand over the BES technology, while still going public about it, which I guess like he's getting some sort of, I think she's essentially taking most of the fall. But in doing that, she inevitably, you know, accepts the blame, but then turns over the BES technology to open source, essentially, so that anyone in the world can access this technology to make it better, because clearly there's still flaws. And I like that sentiment a lot. I mean, I guess it leaves open, you know, still people could use that for nefarious reasons. You know, it's, you know, pretty super advanced technology that I don't understand how it works. But anyway, so this is all happening while the fight's going on. And clearly, you know, Sakuma from Roscoe has, you know, Mac is his poster boy and he has all this invested. But Mac had told him last episode, that he was going to fight his own way. And we didn't know what that meant. But essentially what that means is he's using, I think I wrote her name down, Yoshimura. But Yoshimura is essentially monitoring Mac's vitals while he's fighting. And I love it because they're essentially approaching it the same way Joe's team, Sachio and Yuri, are approaching Joe. Is like, we're going to let you fight and do this because you really want to. Like, he really wants to fight Joe and vice versa. But we're not, if you start to go into Mac time, we can tell by your vitals, you know, when it's dangerous to your health, and we're going to call it. And so basically what happens is she's monitoring his vitals, and Mac starts to appear like he gets the upper hand, and it starts to appear like it's Mac time, but the vitals aren't representing that. So he's kind of just hitting his stride, and he's managing to,
So it's actual Mac time.
Yes. It's like the actual,
original Mac time.
Yes. All right. The OG. Yeah. And this leads to the part that I love. Like, this episode as a whole wasn't fantastic, but this part, was so great. And I like the stuff with Yukiko and stuff that I'll touch on after this. But Sachio starts to notice that, you know, of course, Mac has the upper hand. And then I think they call like a timeout or whatever, and then they start the next round. And
I don't know how the rules in this boxing universe work, but...
I think it's not a timeout. It's like the round ends and they're about to do a new round, right? All right,
yeah.
And so once the new round starts, Mac is still killing it, and Sachio notices that Joe is being more reckless. He's not doing that defensive approach like they had trained for.
Right.
He's being more reckless, and he's probably just getting more fatigued and, you know, just kind of putting himself out there. And so he's taking a lot more hits. And Sachio, he has like this sort of like, he's just thinking about, you know, his memories and stuff. And then he kind of feels like Coach Nanbu on his, you know, by his side. And this culminates in him throwing the towel for Joe, you know, as part of his team.
Yeah.
And so I just love it. I teared up. It was a very emotional part of just, and a happy part of, you know, letting your people, letting your family, you know, intervene, you know, when it's necessary, having that trust, having that faith.
That is, I take back what I said earlier. that is a good resolution for Joe and Sachio. Like, it shows Sachio cares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, which Joe,
we knew he did, but
yeah, but
it's
still
a demonstration
young.
Of it. To Joe, even.
And Joe's reaction is very, you know, understanding and accepting, like, you made the right choice. And he and Mac are, you know, of course, still very respectful to each other. And I don't know, it was such a wholesome.
Mac manages to calm himself down and be normal.
Yeah. Well, he had never, his vital signs had never peaked. You know?
Right. So he never hit like the bad Mac time thing, right? Yeah, it was just regular Mac time. Okay.
So in a sense, it was just a showing of two men's, you know, actual strength colliding without actually having to completely risk their lives. Just doing it as a show of who's literally stronger. Like, there's no anger, there's no malice. It's just us boxing. And it was a really beautiful thing for someone like me who isn't really into boxing. It doesn't really have a lot of opinions on it. I was completely wrapped up in it, and it was great. And then I love, like I already touched upon that, but making the BES medical software open source might have some negative repercussions, but I love the spirit of it. Like, it's a bit rose tinted, I suppose, but it appeals to my sensibilities, where, you know, we can make things open instead of having to be so rigid and so, you know, so self-centered or selfish about it. And that spirit of that ties into, you know, Joe and Saccio and Mac and his family, and just, you know, doing what's best for your people instead of what's, you know, just what your id or what your, you know, your base sentimentalities are telling you to do. So, yeah. It's a good show. It ends with a little coda of things that are to come. I don't really think, I mean, if they make a season 3, I'm on board, but it doesn't really need that.
But season 1 didn't need a season 2, so.
No, it didn't.
You know.
It didn't. And this one, because of that, blew me away. So there's even more pressure if they put out a season 3. But Saccio decides to become a mechanic, and so he is going to another city to do some sort of training with that. And he and Joe kind of, he jumps on Joe's motorcycle part of the way. And and Joe is on his way to, he's planted where he's at. He's rebuilt the training area.
Gym,
yeah. I couldn't think of gym recently either on this podcast.
Yeah.
Gym.
A week ago from today, like, I think,
training,
actually.
Training place. What is that called? Where's the place you train?
Gymnasium. I made that same joke last week too.
His name's not Jim, it's Joe.
oh, my mistake.
Joe's Jim. Maybe that's what's
Jim
throwing
is
me
Joe,
off.
Right.
But anyway, he reassures everyone that, you know, he's like, you guys, you know, to the kids, he's like, you know, you go on your adventures, do what you want, I'll be here. You know, I'll always be here for you until I die. But anyway, at the end he makes a short trip to go see Chief and his family, and we get a little moment during when the match first starts, because he's wearing Chief's gear. And so we see, like, Chief's community and family, like, watching that and, you know, kind of feeling touched by that. So
you say he goes to visit Chief and his family, but didn't Chief?
Oh, Chief died. Yes.
So Chief's family.
Chief's family. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Well, Chief's grave is there.
Oh, okay.
Anyway.
Okay. Yeah. Chief's grave and family. Okay,
yeah.
Sure.
To kind of pay respects and stuff. But I don't know. It was just a nice, happy ending. That was well deserved, and it was emotional. I teared up, and I already miss this world, and like, this show isn't a slice of life, but it kind of has that, just that feel of this is a family that I'll miss, you know, and it really drives home all the messages that
well drawn characters.
Yeah, yeah, lived in and yeah, definitely a realistic, you know. If you want to show that, you know, I mean, Odd Taxi is very much this way too, but especially with the whole animal thing being explained. Mm. But yeah, two shows that are very grounded, realistic, well thought out, and well mapped out.
Speaking of grounded, realistic, well thought out, well mapped out shows with an emotional ending, that's not the thing that we have next.
I'll segue to the opposite of that. Why don't you tell
next
us?
Next up, we have Higehiro, wherein we continue the trend of the last several episodes, where we get some piano music followed by heavy violin music, accompanied by some very forcibly pushed drama.
No cello?
I mean, strings, I guess. Yeah, okay. Violins, strings at all. Sure, strings in general. Yeah, so the content of this episode isn't really important and not worth covering. But my understanding from spoilers from the manga that I read people retelling This one ends a little bit softer or more open than the manga does. So Yoshida leaves Sayu in Hokkaido with her mom after, you know, having resolved whatever they needed to resolve with violin music. And Sayu basically tries to sleep with him again. And he's like, no, I don't sleep with kids. And she's like, well, what about in a few years when I'm not a kid anymore? And he's like, well, then maybe. You see where I'm going. You see where this is going. So then he goes home and, you know, arrives to his empty apartment and, you know, string music plays again. And then we get a sort of a time skip to the future. I don't know, 2 or so years in the future. And he's supposed to be meeting with Sayu's friend from the convenience store, whose name I forget. Who calls him on the phone and says, hey, where are you? I'm already at your place. You don't need to stop at the convenience store because I've already got food and everything. You know, she's like trying to tell him not to go anywhere else, just take his normal route home. Because on his normal route home, he comes up to the what do you call them? The lights overhead. Street light. Yeah. He comes up to the street light where he originally met Sayu. And sitting under that street light is Sayu, now 2 years older and a full-fledged adult. And they say the lines that they said to each other originally, you know, as romantic as that is. Oh, so romantic.
Time to collect.
And that's where it ends. I understand in the manga, it goes just like a touch further in that it's indicated that they're both going back to his place. In this, it doesn't really indicate that they're going back to his place. It ends basically as soon as they meet again.
Cuts to credits after that.
So, yeah. So they tried to soften that a little bit. But, yeah, all the times he's saying, yeah, I'm just not that into you and everything. And I don't know. Whatever. It's it's stupid. Don't watch it. It poops all over itself at the end.
Jeez. I mean, that was specifically at the very beginning
which is what you kept hinting at last week, that I kept saying, I can't talk about it. because I did know spoilers.
Yeah.
And the spoilers were that, yeah, they sort of Usagi drop you a little bit, but it's very soft. Even the manga leaves it very open to interpretation on whether they actually get together or not. This, I think, goes a little bit less far than the manga did as far as saying that they get together. But it's hinted at a bit because clearly Sayu's into him. And there's, in this episode, there's a fair amount of talk about people basically telling Yoshida that he's in love with Sayu and him sort of denying it.
Yeah.
In a way that makes you think that he's just denying it.
But meanwhile, having all these other more age-appropriate women.
Yeah, like what happens with Goto? And we've got his kohai from work as well, who we see her in this episode, and she seems like she's still quite into him. And whatever. Let's move on.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It's... It felt okay for a while, the show, but it definitely went downhill in the last several episodes, the last 4 or 5 episodes. They didn't do the most horrible thing that I thought they could have done story-wise, as far as I was concerned anyway.
Okay.
But they definitely hinted at it. So,
sounds whatever. Pretty firm to me, but...
I
don't know.
It's vague enough that you could be like, oh, well, maybe they're just friends, if that's the avenue that you want to take. Yeah. I think most people that are into this show and maybe enjoy the last several episodes, the avenue that they want to take is that it's a romantic relationship and I want them to get together. And so they get theirs as well, right?
But didn't you say that they literally had the conversation where, you know, what if I was 2 years older?
Would
that change anything? And he said yes.
So, yeah, that was like 2 years ago. Well, it was... What if I was 2 years older? Would I have a shot then? He's like, well, yeah, you might have a shot then. You know, is vague, still very vague, but
yeah.
Yeah.
This guy's a piece of work. All right. And
I mean, he's a good guy. He took in a high school runaway and he didn't have sex with her until she was old enough to have sex with.
When he could have been having sex with other women.
Or he could have been having sex with a high school runaway. He just chose not to.
I guess that's true. Yeah. All right. Know. Well.
So yeah, he's ostensibly a good guy, he holds out as long as he can. But a 17-year-old girl wants to sleep with you. What are you gonna do? I mean, you personally.
No comment.
Yeah, that's probably Yoshida's answer too.
I wouldn't make an anime out of it.
Well, yeah. All right. Let's move on to the next show, and that is Fumetsu no Anatae, or To Your Eternity. This is not the final episode. This is episode 12, I believe, is what we're on.
Yes, but it sure felt like the final episode because...
It could have been. It would have been a real downer of a final episode, but...
But emphasis on the feels.
Yeah, it is the end of an arc, it seems like.
I'm as to not bury the lead, I'm going to read one of my notes to you. Tony was right. This is heart-wrenching murder show.
I told you. Don't get attached. I told you that long time ago.
It was done well. I had complaints about last week's episode. We ended last week's episode with Rin and Gugu having, reaching this fever pitch moment.
Mm-hmm. Sort of confessing their love for each other on this veranda.
Confessing their love, but is also wrapped up on him revealing his face, right? That's a big part of it. And right as she was going to reach for him, the veranda he was standing on completely cracked down the mm-hmm. middle, and he pushes her back to save her, and he starts to fall. And we pick up from that this week, and, he's saved. But I was just annoyed with the, why 3 years later would this, tree...
Entity?
Yeah, tree monster. That's the word I was looking for. Why would this tree monster show up right now of all times? But then we learn that this tree monster has enveloped the land...
Yeah, it's been slowly growing its roots underground.
And I wrote, the knockers grew. Which is what they're called.
Well, but, Reins didn't, but...
I know, after 3 years, you'd think. Get at least a cup size, but that's not why I tune into this show. But immediately...
Oh, it's not? Oh, I mean, that's my only reason.
Better not now. We're moving on.
Yeah.
But... that was immediately explained, that cliffhanger that I had issues with. But I was so frustrated because they had built this tension, in my mind, they had built up this tension and then completely undercut it. But there's reason for it. I guess we can continue on.
You're talking about the tension of the reveal of his face, right?
Yes.
Okay. See, I didn't feel that same tension.
I know.
Which I said last week.
I know.
But, so what do you want me to continue on?
Well, we'll just go through the episode. I mean,
he falls,
and there's these tentacles that are part of the tree monster coming out of
the cliffside.
Cliffs, and so he grabs onto. Yeah. I think he grabs onto one of them, and then Rin and the other people come rushing out, and they help him. But while this is all happening,
Rin's already out there.
Well, Rin's already out there, but other people rush out
and
help assist.
Fushi's inside, and the creator. Says something to him like the knockers are back or something like that.
Yeah, and he explains that they've enveloped the land and it's a big problem. And it's like you could have told me this sooner, but all right. and so Fushi transforms into Oniguma and is trying to hold up the mansion.
Oh yes, because it's collapsing the knockers are basically shaking the whole land.
Mm. Knockers are shaking, and sorry, I can't stop. It's like when a show is perverted, we're very critical of it, but then when it's clearly not, but has a perverted name, it's not really a perverted name, but knockers really. Okay. So then I'm trying to think what happens, but essentially while Gugu is being saved from falling, we don't really see it happen, but the tree monster, gets Oniguma. Because all of a sudden, once Gugu realizes what's going on, Rin is trying to talk to him. You know, they were in the middle of something. And but he's like, no,
it's more important things to deal with right now, woman.
Which is true. she should have recognized that. But she didn't take it personally. But he runs off to where Fushi is. He's inside. And then we see that we see a, as I'm going to refer to it, Stony Guma. Because the knockers, I don't know if it's supposed to even be plural, but they seem to say plural.
I'm not sure, yeah.
But the monster has taken Oniguma and has covered themselves in stone. They've upgraded or evolved in some way. They have this armor.
Yeah, so it's no longer a wooden tree-like Oniguma. It's a Oniguma made of rocks.
Yeah, Stony
Guma. Which are still controlled by these tentacles, similar to what the knockers used before when they were in tree form, I guess.
But yeah, but it's encased in stone.
I say they, but...
Well, they keep referring to them in the plural.
Well, knockers, you mean.
Knockers, right? Yes.
But not necessarily they. Although they is a nice, like, non-gender-specific form to refer to them as anyway. Because I couldn't say the knockers are a he or the knockers are a she. But the knockers are a they.
Yes.
So they, the knockers.
I mean, knockers usually come in pairs anyway, but...
It's true. we haven't seen the other one yet.
Okay, so they work together. Fushi's like, I need help. I don't know what to do here. He's kind of panicking, and Gugu's like, well, we got to find a weak spot. We got to get on top of them.
One other thing. So after he turns into Oniguma, and then he turns back into the boy, the unnamed boy, aka who we know as Fushi generally.
Yeah,
he's much younger again, right?
Yeah,
just worth mentioning.
And I took that as he had used up so much strength, or maybe just he hadn't because he hadn't converted in a while. Do you think that's it? Like,
yeah.
He went back and forth.
I think it's said specifically that he aged because he had not changed forms. That was the only way he could, was he continued to age with everyone else. But if he changed, then he would go back to being whatever the initial form was, which is what happens here.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
I'm sort of worth mentioning.
Understood it slightly differently, but I think you're right.
I thought
that was part of it, but I thought that because he had spent so much time with Gugu, that was part of it too, that he had sort of synced, like Fushi had synced to his maturation, but the fact that this kind of proves it, like what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I just had, had a different perception of it prior to this. So anyway, they find the weak spot, essentially, Fushi can generate these arrows.
Spears, yeah.
Yeah. And so they, and Gugu just kind of wedges them.
Hands them to Gugu, and Gugu like wedges between the rocks and finds the heart of the knockers.
Yeah.
And then it basically abandons the Oniguma form at that point and tries to escape.
Yes. And it does escape. Heart. But they're not quick enough to, Fushi, at the last minute tries to, attack the core, but fails. And then Fushi turns into March at this point, I forget why.
I think the earth opens up and they sort of fall down in and they grab onto another of the tendrils of the knockers. And March is really good at climbing, which we know from prior. So.
And also small and quicker. Yeah.
So March is climbing up the cliff face to escape from chasm that has been opened. Yeah.
So after they escape, they're trying to regroup. But at that moment, the knockers have regrouped.
The knockers, singular.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a very swift scene just... basically grab March and squish her, like the blood spurts.
Yeah.
And then I think right after that, the Stony Guma is about to crush Gugu, but then Rin jumps in at the last minute and
pushes him out of the way.
And they both...
Very similar to when he pushed her out of the way from the log earlier.
That's true.
Nice callback.
Yeah, which she had finally realized last episode was the case. And so she paid that forward. And then this is where I get really confused.
And she paid it back. There was no forward there. He paid it forward. She paid it back.
All right. Oh my God. Anyway.
You're welcome.
Forward or back, it was paid. Okay, anyway. So what happens is that they, after this point, they are trying to escape, but there's rubble falling.
Mm.
And we don't really see it happen, but presumably that rubble falls on them.
The whole roof collapses.
Yeah. We don't really see this, though.
We see it from the outside.
Yeah, but it's not, I don't know, I feel like it could have been animated better, but we cut to a position that's in the dark, you know, under this rubble, where Reen is lying down and Gugu is right on top of her, and he's, you know, has his arms outstretched, and he's like struggling to hold up this rubble, whatever, you know, whatever debris is above them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really nice moment. And it culminates in them confessing their love and him opening his, which it was kind of funny when he opened his mask.
He doesn't open it. She opens it.
No, look, it just opens. I just assumed he did it. But she doesn't actually like open it physically.
I thought she did.
Because I watched it a couple times because I was confused with this.
I thought she opened it.
Yeah. Well, either way, it's not that important. But they have a kiss. She puts her face inside of the mask.
Well, and she finally sees his face unobscured by the mask. Not that we don't see it.
Yeah.
She gets to see it, which was the important part.
Yeah. So there was that payoff of her seeing it, and which was very sweet and nice. And then that we just cut away from that scene, and the next thing we know is we go to Fushi, and it becomes apparent that Gugu has died.
Yeah,
because he feels it. He feels this trembling. He's feeling pain that's not his own. And then he transforms into Gugu, which only happens once someone he shared a connection with dies, right?
Yep.
And that's a very, that's, this is not the moment where I teared up.
It's a very eloquent way of telling us that Gugu died, I think. I mean, it was a nice way of, you know, we don't have to see Gugu getting crushed by rocks.
Yes.
To understand that that's what happened.
But here's where I get, and it was a very nice, I agree with you. The way they did that aspect of it was very nice. Where I get confused is like, we never see Reen get out of this rubble. Like she was right beneath him.
It's true.
And so if he dies, it's not because he's still holding up the rubble and he just, his heart stopped. It's like he's because he was crushed, right?
Presumably.
And she's right underneath him. Right. And we never see like her getting out. And even if, I mean, she clearly does get out because she's not dead.
She gets out later. Yeah.
Yeah. But we never see like, you know, she's just like getting out of this rubble being like, well, he must be right behind me. you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, she was, presumably Gugu collapsed on top of her. And the rubble, I don't know, killed him in some way. Not sure exactly how. Maybe smashed his head into nothing.
Yeah.
Whatever the case may be, basically Reen had a Gugu-shaped pad on top of her that kept the rubble from crushing her in some way.
Yeah.
But
yet somehow...
We know that she was knocked unconscious because she does not recall these events happening later.
Yeah. I just wish that would have been illustrated, that sequence
I think they tried to leave it vague on purpose, but...
Yeah, probably.
Because Reason's story later.
Yeah. And there's a part at the end of this episode that really got to me, and it's where I teared up.
That's what got to everybody. I read a lot of comments online, and that's really the part that got everybody.
Yeah. Which that's good to hear. But it would have been, I don't know what they could have done, but I wish there would have been a little more clarity there or something. Mm. So essentially, like, what happens after this?
So he turns into Gugu, and then he uses his new physique, Fushi, that is, turns into Gugu, and uses his new physique and belly full of sake and the sparker thing that is in the mask and everything, to sort of burn out the knockers out from inside the Oniguma, Stony Guma. As we're calling him, apparently.
I think it's good.
And then how does he get to the core, though? Like, he does that, and the core tries to escape, and he...
I think it gets away.
Does it get away again?
Yeah, because the creator shows up, and he's like,
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it ends
go
up
that way.
That's what happens. They end up in the sea somehow, right? They end up falling sort of off the cliff where Gugu had fallen earlier.
Yeah.
And they fall into the sea.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
And then the water does something to the knockers, because it seems to be the water that is sort of killing the knockers. I'm not actually 100% sure on that. Like, I was a little confused by that, I guess.
I just took it that, like, the heat plus the fall, like, made it retreat.
Oh, the heat and then the immediate cooling, maybe?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe there's something else there of, like, the water is something that can... You know, it's like,
well, I don't know, because then the core just goes swimming off through the water.
Yeah, so that's true.
I don't know. Yeah, that's why I was a little confused by it.
It's retreating nonetheless.
Yes, yes. The core escapes.
Yeah.
Although I don't know how much that actually matters, because I mean, the last two times they encountered the knockers, they destroyed the core and it still comes back. Right?
Maybe that's why it's plural. It's there's a whole, units. Maybe there's like a mother brain or something.
Maybe it's like a fungus with like an underground network of...
It could be.
Whatever. Yeah.
Something. Clearly, and I've complained about this before, but clearly there's more to this enemy than we know.
Yeah.
And it's going to be revealed as we go along. But
we've got how many volumes?
13 yeah, we
more
got a
volumes?
Lot more. Yeah, we got to be patient here.
Probably more to be revealed in the future.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then after that, then the battle is... Basically, the battle is over at that point, and I think some people go and they rescue Reen from the rubble somehow. I think I kind of remember that. And
I don't think that scene exists, but
and Fushi goes home to Boo's Man's.
Well, there's a scene where Gugu's body is, and someone walks up to that. I don't know if it's Pioran and Boo's Man. Or somebody not Reen, like, walks up and sees Gugu like that, and Fushi is there too, and so it's, like, clear that he's dead, right? And so this is what kind of confused me. I suppose if like you were saying, which makes sense, if Reen passed out, then she missed that whole thing. And I don't know, I could be wrong. I don't think there's a scene of her being rescued from the rubble.
Maybe not, yeah.
But then it cuts to, like, Fushi has a conversation with Pioran and Boozman about, like, what he's gonna, you know, his plans are next, and he's going to be getting out of here because he doesn't want to cause them, you know, trouble. He's, you know, he's going to be attracting the enemy.
When does Gugu's brother show up? Does he
show up at the rubble? That's the one who shows up. Yeah, that's right. Okay. I was like, I know it's some key character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was a bit underwritten, but anyway, yeah. He's there, and then he ends up taking over Gugu's responsibilities, which is sweet, you know. He's kind of looking after the farm and stuff,
working at the job, and yeah.
That's like, oh, that's sweet. But anyway, this all ends in, you know, Fushi being like, all right, I'm gonna head out, and then he's in the house and he hears Reen coming, and he starts to panic. He looks in the mirror and he's the boy. The original boy.
Yeah.
And he says, I can't be like this.
She can't see me like this.
And I took this as, like, because he's grown so much, he's starting to think more like a human. And so he's having anxiety about having to tell Reen that Gugu is dead, assuming that she doesn't already know he's dead. And so he turns into Gugu in the last moment.
Yeah, see, so that seemed to be the read that most people had on it from what I read online. But the read that I had on it was he was panicking because he was worried that she would realize that he was an immortal that could change forms and stuff. Like, she would notice that he was younger.
Yeah.
And he sort of panics and says, I have to turn into something else. And he chooses Gugu. And I thought it was just sort of accident or happenstance that he ended up turning into Gugu. And then he doesn't know how to explain it. But I think I like the way that other people have interpreted it better, which is that he intentionally turns into Gugu because he doesn't want to have to explain to Reen that Gugu is dead.
But then I like that other take you had too, though. But this one made the most sense to me. But because then he ends up telling her that Fushi's dead, like, as if that's easier than telling her Gugu's dead, which it probably is, but she tears up to that even still, and And he shows her Gugu's grave, which is actually, or Gugu's grave, which he says is Fushi's grave.
Right.
And yeah, that's, it's pretty emotional.
Which is unmarked. So it's not like she could read and see that it says Gugu or anything. The only way that we know that it's Gugu's grave is because his brother had gotten a bunch of steamed buns and brought them and laid them on Gugu's grave. Because apparently Gugu likes steamed buns. I don't know.
Yeah. And I just, I kind of, that's the only, because without that explanation, because I originally had that thought too, that you were saying, like, because he looks in the mirror and you know, he's younger than he appears. Yeah, yeah. So I thought of that too. But the only way this makes sense to me is the other way that that he didn't know how to tell her Gugu was dead. Mm. Because otherwise,
I definitely like that better.
Yeah. Because otherwise it just seems too cruel to Rin, you know?
Yeah.
If Fushi's just doing it to preserve, you know, who he really is, it doesn't really.
Yeah. Yeah. So in my interpretation, watching it before I read the comments and realized that it's probably more like what you guys are thinking than what I was thinking. Mm. It was that he panicked and turned into Gugu, and then he had to explain his way out of it, but also didn't want to hurt her. So it kind of melds into the sort of the same thing as the situation that everyone else envisioned for this, as opposed to what I did. Yeah, like I say, I like that better. I like that Fushi, you know, thought enough to say, oh, if she sees me, then she'll know that Gugu's dead or something. Mm. And so I have to turn into Gugu and lighten this blow.
If she sees me and not Gugu, then she's going to ask, you know, right? Mm. Like one way or another, I'm going to have to tell her.
Right. Yeah. She's going to come and she's going to be like, where's Gugu?
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm Gugu, she's not going to ask that.
She's going to ask for Fushi, and that's easier to lie about than to tell the dark truth.
It's easier to say your friend died than the person that you love died.
But isn't even harder to say that, you know, to keep her waiting, you know, because she says, you know, she tells him.
I mean, she clearly has caught on by the end.
Yes,
of it,
I know that's true, but but there's still some doubt there, I think, you know, because
has caught on or.
Well, no, just in her heart. Because, okay, so we haven't got to that final scene yet.
Yeah.
But, so I'll get us there. But, I do think once he transforms into Gugu, he kind of acts more like Gugu, you know, he kind of has that awkward, like, oh, I don't know what to say. And I think there's something there of where, you know, when he actually transforms into whoever it is, you know, he kind of has some of their personality.
Yeah.
And then they do establish, we hadn't talked about this at all.
But I think the awkwardness that he displays is Fushi awkwardness trying to pretend to be Gugu. And that's what Rin recognizes, and that's how she knows that Gugu's dead. She knows that because she's seen Fushi transform, which he doesn't know, but she knows that he can do that, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I like that take. I had a different thought on it because what we haven't talked about is this episode, which had been hinted at before when March died.
Mm, yeah.
But it firmly, in my mind, it firmly contextualizes that in this world the afterlife is real, and that these spirits, at least in relation to Fushi, because these spirits are with him now.
I think perhaps only in relation to Fushi, but yes.
Maybe, but also Fushi's creator is in a sense a god, and you know, he may not be the only god, but he has godlike powers, and so even if there's more gods like him, you would imagine that they would you know, behave in a similar fashion. And so, I don't know, this is my argument. But they spend quite a bit of time on this. Like, you know, we see Fushi, or we see Gugu in spirit form a lot, you know, for quite a bit of runtime.
Yeah, definitely a lot more than we saw March before.
And I even think there's a line said when he turns into Gugu of something like that, some inner monologue of like, maybe Gugu is, you know, experiencing this as it's happening, you know, like he's part of it. I forget exactly what's said, but you know, your take could be accurate too. But I just read it a little differently that Gugu is not only a spirit in spirit form, but he's with him. And
that's I get what you're saying now. And that does relate back to March's death, where Perona is about to kill what's her name, bad girl from way back when.
Yeah,
yeah, she doesn't whatever need a name. Her name is. And March, Spirit March, realizes this and stops her through Fushi, right?
Yeah,
she essentially sort of possesses Fushi and causes him to stop Perona doing that. And yeah, this could very much be the same thing. I hadn't actually thought of that.
Wow.
Where Gugu essentially, maybe that reaction that we get from Fushi of she can't see me like this is actually Gugu.
Yeah.
And Gugu sort of takes over Fushi, and yeah, that's
I hadn't taken it that far, but now that you say that, that makes a lot more sense. Like, because Fushi is kind of like, he's coming into his own, but he absorbs all these different affectations and personality traits from other people that he grows close to. Gugu now, where we're at, being the strongest, the most recent, but also the longest time he spent with someone. And so, yeah, he's kind of a conduit now that, you know, he's literally, like, these people are literally with him in spirit form.
Right. And we see later, March is still there as well, because we see her spirit as well.
Yeah, and she's kind of like, who is this new guy?
Right,
I'm scared. which is kind of interesting. I wonder...
So I feel like it's going to be expanded on more as we go on. But
yeah.
But yeah, I hadn't considered that it was actually Gugu manipulating Fushi into, which is all the more interesting, actually.
Because even in the afterlife, Gugu can't bear to break her heart, you know?
Right.
And to her face.
Right. The whole time I was thinking it was Fushi that was sort of covering for himself in some way.
Yeah.
But if it's Gugu actually sort of occupying Fushi and doing that, then it's a lot better.
It's way more heartfelt and emotional.
Yeah. It just makes me want to catch up on the manga so I can know.
Yeah. Shoot. I mean, if they don't announce if this doesn't get renewed for more, then yeah, I'm going to have to start reading the manga at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we've got, eight more episodes now?
I think.
Was this 12 or 13 of this?
This is 12.
This is 12 of this. Yeah. So 8 more of this, apparently. Yeah. And yeah, we had talked about why is it that they went 20 episodes? Like, that's so weird to do a season in a third-ish.
Yeah.
You know? Season and a half, maybe, I guess.
They gotta have a roadmap.
And I mean, in watching this episode, I was like, yeah, obviously they couldn't end it here because it's a super huge downer, right?
Yeah.
Like, they've gotta have some ups to end on, some call to adventure or something. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Okay, so getting to this final scene, I don't think there's much more that happens after this, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, but essentially, the final scene we see at night, Rin has you know, been playing hooky from her house, and her dad's kind of looking for her, and he finds her laying by where she said she would wait for Gugu.
Right.
Presumably sometime later, who knows, a couple months or something, maybe a day, I don't know. but she's laying in these bell flowers, dream bell flowers, as they call them, which isn't a real flower, but this flower that they have a special connection with, and he comes up to her and is like, what are you doing? Like, we've been looking for you. And she's like, she's like, Dad, I'm not going to get married. And he's like, what? He's like, there's someone else I love. And he's like, who is it? I want to meet him. And she said, he's gone. He's gone. I don't think he's coming back or something like that. And then you see a tear stream down from her face. And so this is the scene where, you know, you can tell that she knows in her heart that Fushi or Gugu. I keep mixing up their names.
It's difficult.
They're brothers. They're brothers at this point anyway, so they're synonymous in a sense. But yeah, that Gugu is gone for good. Yeah. But it's crushing. This episode left me feeling very empty and very sad. But I still got from that scene that she isn't entirely convinced from that, you know? Like, there's still a tiny ember that, because she saw him, you know?
Yeah.
Because of, and now that we're talking about, which I like, that it was actually Gugu who was influencing Fushi to keep the hope alive. I think that hope is still alive, even though in her heart of hearts, she knows that he's gone.
But, so she says something, I don't remember exactly what she says, but she says something about he's with Fushi or something. Like, that might have been her own internal monologue as well.
Maybe, yeah.
But she says something along that, like, she realizes, she knows that he's gone, but also that he is...
That he lives on.
Part of Fushi or with Fushi or something like that at this point, right? Yeah. Yeah, and I certainly see why people, you know, got so emotional with this episode. I very much knew that we were getting attached to Gugu so that he could die and make us cry. And I think most people knew that. I think you knew that. I think everyone knew that.
I did, but I didn't expect it this way. And it was done very well. Like, that's a compliment.
I somehow managed to immunize myself against that. I did not get misty-eyed or anything during this. Like, I definitely felt the feels, but like not far not enough to get me misty-eyed. Like, the March was way harder.
Yeah.
Like, I took March real hard, right? And maybe because that was more unexpected. Like, I didn't know at that point that that's what was going to happen. And I was really just... Yeah, slack-jawed by that.
And we're kind of flip-flopped on that, because I, of course, when March died, I felt it, but it didn't hit me as hard as it hit you, and it didn't hit me as hard as this hit me. And I think it was because it was one person removed. You know, it was the emotional stakes of Rean. You know, and how and even if it's the whole idea of trying to save someone from grief, you know, and how you just make it worse, even though you have the best intentions. And like, that was the crux of how heartbreaking it was for me to see her have to come to terms with, you know, the fact that Gugu is gone, even though there's no one is going to tell her that. Like, she has to, and that's kind of a coming of age thing. Like, she has to accept that in her own mind, without anyone comforting her. Like, her dad, for instance, is right there. But he didn't really know, you know, he met Gugu, but he didn't really know him. And I don't think she's about to, you know, try to confide into him. So she's becoming an adult in the process of also experiencing like extreme heartbreak and loss. And that just crushed me.
I guess I see that. I don't think I liked Rean as much as other people did.
Maybe. Okay.
I don't know.
We're into her. Yeah, she didn't. Yeah. Which I, and that was kind of one of those things too, is like when she was first introduced, I was like, you know, whatever. I wasn't intending to get attached to her, but clearly it happened. So
I mean, so the attachment comes through Gugu because of Gugu's attachment to her. We sort of inherit that because of our attachment to Gugu, right? So it all makes sense. I thought Rean was a stuck up spoiled brat the whole time. I never really liked her very much. I never understood why Gugu liked her, other than she was just pretty or whatever, you know. Like, it's not enough to convey that attachment from him to me, I guess.
Yeah,
for me,
I guess I get that. I mean,
I'm a cold-hearted evil person, I think.
That's not true. You teared up at March. Okay, you just don't like brats.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, March was a little bit of a brat, but she was a sweet brat.
That's true.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. And I think maybe that's kind of the beauty of this show, is like, we've established, and I was kind of in denial about, not that I didn't think Gugu would die, but I didn't expect to be this emotional. But, you know, maybe that's kind of the point, is like, some of these deaths, even though you know they're going to come, will hit different people harder than others. And then once the next one comes around, you think like, oh, I'm fine. And then you're not.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's like, so with March, her death was very much unexpected. I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
With Gugu, I knew it was coming, but I didn't actually see this coming at this time.
Yeah.
Like, if you'd asked me last week, is Gugu going to die next episode? Well, before the end of the episode last week, I suppose.
Which we did talk about that.
I thought we had longer to go. Even when we talked about it, like the cliff falling, like, no, he's going to be fine. He's going to help Fushi, yada, yada, yada. I thought we had probably the rest of the episodes left. I thought maybe Gugu was going to die, like episode 20, maybe 19, whatever. I thought we had all of that left, because I knew we had episodes left.
Yeah.
So maybe I was factoring that in as well. But yeah, it certainly, when Fushi turned into Gugu, I paused it and I rewound it and I watched it again. And then I paused it and I rewound it and I watched it again. And then I paused it and rewound it. And I was like, all right, Gugu's dead. Like I had to watch it like four times before I knew it the first time I saw it, but I was like, wait, what?
No.
And I went back and yeah. Mm. So like I knew it was coming. I just didn't know it was coming so soon, I guess, right?
Yeah.
It still took me by surprise to a certain extent.
And it happened suddenly. I mean, not that the predicament made sense that he was
The predicament happened suddenly as well with him, you know, the cliff collapsing and all of that. Like, you know, it was a very action-y episode, which normally I don't like action things, but there was a lot of action in this and it was all motivated and good.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, action is good when it's, you know, lifting up the stakes and it's, you know, it's actually delivering some.
Yeah. When there's a reason for it.
Yeah.
Not just some people say, hey, you fight you 5 episodes go.
Okay.
you know what I'm talking
no,
about.
No, I know. Now I was saying, okay, I'll fight. Who am I fighting?
Pikachu over there.
All right. You're going to get it.
He can do Iron Tail though.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a quick fight. He's a piggy bank, a Pika bank. Yes. Like you said, we got 8 more episodes. This is a really good one. I have take some slight issue with it.
With this one or the previous one?
With this one, because just because of the way they you kind of fell off on the manga, and I'd be curious to read it as well, but I don't think you didn't read this part of the manga.
I have not read this far, no.
And I'm just curious if it differs at all, like this predicament. Like I just wish it would have been set up, the whole Gugu's death. I wish it would have been set up a little better and resolved a little better. Like just a little, I don't know what, but just a little thing to indicate that Rin lived and Gugu died, but that she didn't know he died. Like that, like they left that completely open, and I think they left it too open.
Yeah.
I think wish they would have like written that a little more.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah. It's like, sort of it's a difficult point to how did Gugu die in a way that Rin, who was literally kissing him the moment before that, didn't know, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see the issue with that. I very much doubt the manga did it any better. Like if you sort of imagine the cells and the pages of a manga and how this story goes, you can kind of picture like every single cell that they show.
Yeah.
And they definitely skip over that, I think.
And you had said that the, you know, it was pretty faithful.
Very accurate. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's fair enough. And there's even like during that scene, you know, before the kiss, some blood, you know, drips down out of the mask onto Rin's face. So even if he wasn't crushed to death, he was clearly already, you know, had suffered injuries and he was on his way to dying, perhaps.
Yeah.
But then even by that logic, if he would have died while, you know, holding this rebel up against her, then his muscles would have, you know, relaxed. I guess you had rigor mortis. I don't know. And she was able to escape.
Rigor mortis takes longer than that, but.
Yeah. I'm trying to find a way out of it. But
maybe he was holding it up and then he died and his joints locked. All of his joints locked.
And then she was like, oh, look,
she was just in a little goo-goo cave.
Maybe. And then she passed out and then they saved her.
Yeah. Well, she passed out because she kissed him and he's full of liquor. And she's never drank before. So she like had she's some liquor drunk. And she just like passed out.
And she didn't know how to kiss. Ooh. Or she was like sucking in like air.
Yeah.
You know? Like that's how you kiss.
Or liquor. Yeah. Yeah. She was just sucking liquor out of his face. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Like, what is happening?
This all makes sense.
Why do I feel funny?
This is canon.
It's a minor gripe. It's just something that...
Yeah. No, like, I get it. I get you.
It's not like... I brought up CinemaSins earlier for something, which I think is so stupid. It's like pointing out some, you know, non-factual, you know, tidbit that doesn't really matter. Mm. But I think it's important in this case because it would have elevated... It was already emotional and it got me. So I'm not complaining on that front, but it would have elevated it a little more, I think. But it's a minor issue. This is a very strong episode and a very good show.
Yeah. I think it was intentionally done so that we clearly knew that Gugu died.
Yeah.
We didn't know Rin's fate until we saw her later.
Yeah.
I think that was intentional.
Yeah.
You know, like,
but I had assumed they both died after it cut away from that.
I think we're supposed to maybe.
Oh, okay.
And then we see her and we're like, oh, she lived somehow. And then we don't question why or how,
but then very conveniently, they never have to revisit that because you know, Fushi's gone.
Yeah. So yeah, like there is a gap in knowledge there. I think it's an intentional gap inflicted by the writer upon us.
Oh yeah. I agree too. I'm not insulted. I'm
trying to think of a way they could have done it that it would have carried the weight the same that it did this way. And I think if you let us know earlier that Reen survived somehow, it takes a little bit away. It would soften the later sting of her realizing that Gugu's dead in some way, just a little bit, not a lot, yeah. But a little bit.
I mean, there could have been a scene where they were both taken, you know, rescued from the rubble and she didn't know that he was dead yet. Right.
But then we would know she was alive, which we don't know until she shows up.
Yeah. But I don't think that reveal is that important, you know?
I mean, I don't think it is, but I think the timing of it is what makes it more impactful in the deception that Fushi and or Gugu use. Because if we had assumed that she's dead, which we did, essentially.
Yes.
Gugu died, so we assumed that she was dead as well.
Yeah.
We are suddenly given this lift like, oh, she lived. And then immediately drawn into her realization that Gugu was dead, right? So we get that uptick followed by the downswing. If we don't have that uptick right there, then the downswing isn't as deep, right?
Literally all I needed was like somebody, you know, one of the, humans or whatever, taking, you know, going through the rubble, taking a rock out and seeing like Reen, not knowing if she's alive.
Oh, okay. We could have assumed she was dead as well.
Just showing the rescue. That's what I needed because it just cuts away from all of that. And it's not like she was in it, like we talked about earlier. It's not like she's in a position where she can easily get out.
Right.
Like if Gugu dies, like she's in imminent danger. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
That's all I needed. Just a little scene of like,
I see what you're saying. Rescue. Not necessarily knowing that she's alive, but seeing their bodies removed from the rubble. And we can still assume that she's dead at that point. Right.
Yeah.
And then that doesn't mess up any of the later stuff either. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. That's it.
I don't know that I needed that, but you know,
it's a minor thing. Like I said, it doesn't hold a lot of, bearing on my enjoyment of the show, but it's just, we're talking about it and I gotta be critical when it's.
And then we get, the preview of the next episode.
New characters to fall shows in love with.
Things that we've been seeing in the opening credits since the beginning of the show.
Pink blood.
Also, rock monsters were in the opening credits. I don't know if you noticed that, but
oh, were they?
Yeah, I was watching the opening this time because I don't know. Like last week when we were talking about it, you were upset about the suddenness of Gugu's fall from the veranda, basically, and I was like, there's got to be some justification for it, which they did justify in this episode.
Yes.
With them being like interwoven through the knockers being interwoven through the rock, right?
Yeah, the entire ground.
And yeah, so if you watch the opening, there are rock monsters and we totally see that. And we also see these other characters as well.
Nice.
So I was paying a little bit more attention to the opening this time. And anyway.
So we're going, setting off on a new journey.
I don't think there's anything else. So I think these new characters that we get, we're going to go on a journey with them. And apparently Pieran goes along as well. And
she's stubborn.
Yeah, she's got to watch out for Fushi. I almost said Gugu. both of them.
I mean, I guess you can, right?
Yeah, both of them, really.
Call him March. Call him Rock.
Joan.
Joan. Hey, you rock.
Rock. Hey, mossy rock.
So I hope in these next 8 episodes that, I mean, we're going to meet these new characters and probably going to fall in love with them. And we don't know if they will die.
Again, I'm presuming that the reason that they are extending this season is so that they don't end on a downer note.
Yeah.
Which would have been this episode, right? And they can't really start the next episode without starting a new arc. So this next arc must at least, I don't know that the whole arc ends positively, but maybe we cut off halfway through the arc on a high point.
Mm. See, I'm thinking
differently. So I'm assuming that none of them are going to die before episode 20. And we, when we were off mic, we had almost this exact same conversation, and I offered to bet you financial money dollars on this outcome. And you said, well, I mean, you started by saying, I'll take that bet. And I said, well, I got $83 in my pocket.
I don't know if I need to put money on
how
it.
Much, but, how much? Do you, well, okay. What do you want to bet then?
I don't know, but...
No.
What I am going to say is that I think differently. I think the reason this is a 20-episode length is that they... I'm hoping, in any case, that they're ending it on a note where it can be a cohesive conclusion, but also leave, you know, it open for more story.
You don't think they could have ended it on this episode and had that?
I mean, they could have, but I'm assuming that they, from the source material, that there is a natural stopping point. That
maybe,
because why not go for 24, 26? Like,
yeah,
why cap it off at 20? Like, I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt that they plotted this all out and this is an intentional stopping point. And I have to assume, if that's the case, that it's going to be an emotional one. So I think there will be deaths based on that. Right. And what will I bet?
What do you want to bet?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of like some. You know, we have associated tasks with this podcast, but I don't know. I'm trying to think of something that would work out. We do need to commission some artwork, and that's going to have to come out of one of our pockets. Maybe we could wager that some artwork commission.
All right. So the person who is responsible for finding the person to commission this art is still responsible for that. But we're talking about just like a financial payment towards that.
You got to pay it. Just one piece of artwork from one artist. You got to pay it.
The problem is that I'm not negotiating those prices. You are. So you could just find an artist and negotiate a $600 price tag for a piece of art, and then I'd have to pay it.
Because that sounds like me. No, we'll do it together. It's something we need to sit down and do, I think, anyway.
Yeah, but no, I'll leave it to you. But sure, I will pay up to $83 cash. And and otherwise, you pay up to $83 cash.
Okay.
All right.
Deal. Well, anyway. Right.
Yeah. Now that bet is finalized, you, the internet, are the witness if George fails to pay for or procure this artwork. You need to hold him responsible. And if you don't, just remind me and I will.
And he's a sack of shit, so you got to stay on him. Oh, wait, that's me.
Yeah, well, yeah. I thought you were talking about yourself in the third person, so.
No, I was.
Anyway, I was going to say that's it for us, but then I realized, oh yeah, that's right. We still have to wrap up the special challenge. Flying Witch, George, you've watched all of the episodes. How wonderful is it on a scale of 9 to 10?
I got to go with 10 of those.
All right. And that's going to do it for us this week, folks. No, do you have anything further you want to say on Flying Witch, the whole season, this episode, whatever?
God, we've spent so much time this episode talking about shows that I don't need to spend much time on this. But that is not to diminish its quality. It's a Iyashike, specifically Iyashike slice of life. And it's really good. I really liked it. You've been telling me about it since it came out.
It's the best.
And I am not, it's not my genre typically, but I really liked it. And I had multiple shows to compare it with this season, and it knocked those out of the water. I was thinking about this, like, I was also thinking of like doing like a rating system of like based on food, but for this show, okay, I would give a chocolate mousse to, which I brought up mousse earlier, but because I think it's rich,
odd scale, but okay,
but it's light, it's rich, it's light. The characters feel lived in, even though they aren't that fleshed out. And the nature of the show is such that you don't really have to be that invested. Like it really just plays into that feeling of having these friends, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yakumo, you know, is this after school special pottery show that didn't do it for me. But by comparison, Flying Witch knocks it out of the park. Like, Shinatsu is the younger girl character. She's my favorite. Akane is the sister witch. I love her as well. Those are my top two. But literally everyone else, from the
mom
and dad.
You've got a Nonesan. You've got an Emoto-san.
What else do you need?
But
that's the thing. And like, there's no, for anyone listening, like, there's no pervertedness. There's no ecchi. It's all wholesome, fun, and funny. Like, there's several funny parts in this. I laughed out loud. There's several gorgeous shots. Other shows like Super Cub this season have some gorgeous shots, but then they have some kind of junky shots that aren't that great. Flying Witch looks great, like fantastic throughout. Like, they hit all the marks that they need to hit, and it doesn't go deep. Like, you've kind of criticized me a little bit, or given me some shit for, you know, having too high expectations for some of these slice of life shows.
For Yakumo specifically.
Yes.
Well, having expectations that I didn't think were justified, but yes, you know.
But it's from my perspective, whatever. It's different. But I'll give it up to Flying Witch because, it was nice to have those shows to compare it to, this season.
It may not be the show that you want, but it is the show that you need. I think everyone needs a little bit.
It just, is nice. You know, yeah.
It's a relaxing time. It's a comfy sleeping bag. I don't know.
And it commits
comfy.
To that.
Comfy is the word that I use to describe a Yashike all the time. It's just like, and yeah, what you were saying about friends, you know, like you feel sort of, I mean, not directly, but sort of like they are your friends, right? Like these are your sort of surrogate friends in this show that you're watching. You feel that same closeness that you feel to close friends. Whereas Yakumo, we never got, you know, enough of the characters to really feel that, I think, is probably the issue there.
Well, that was a shorter episode.
But
length.
It also wasn't really specifically an Iyashike show, I don't think.
But that's true. Either, but that show was trying to introduce this, like, drama with, like, this deceased mom for the main character, but it wasn't committing to any of that. But, like, Flying Witch never did that. We still don't know Makoto's parents.
We don't know either of them.
And none of it matters.
Yeah.
Like, they don't set any of that up, so there's no payoff that's expected from my perspective.
Yeah. And Super Cub, we don't really know anything about.
That's true.
Koguma? Yeah, Koguma's parents. Sorry, I thought I said Kumoko. But then I realized that Koguma. I said Koguma, which was actually correct. I said the correct thing and thought I said the wrong thing.
And by comparison, I like Super Cub okay. I mean, I guess if I'm thinking about Flying Witch, honestly, for myself, I don't know. It's hard to rate, but it's definitely higher than Super Cub, which I gave a 6. So this would either be a 7 or an 8. Yashike is not my genre, so it's hard to be like, oh, this is an 8, you know?
Mm.
But it probably is if I really sat with it.
I mean, Yashike should be your genre. I mean, you need to relax, man. You're a little too high strung. So, you know, you need to watch more Yashike.
I need some chill time. Maybe I'll start Nanon Biori next because I already like...
That's also great.
I already like that.
Yeah.
But see, that's the thing is like, compared to Super Cub, these characters and the whole vibe, the whole aesthetic is so much more enjoyable, but the characters are more likable too.
Mm.
Like Koguma is a hard character to like, even though I personally identified with her social anxiety and all that. It's too much. The depth is too great for the show it's trying to be, I think. Whereas like Flying Witch is perfect. It's just pitch perfect on what it's trying to do. And it completely succeeds at that.
Yeah. So, folks, go out there, get on the Twitter campaign, more Flying Witch. We need more of it. I know there's more source material out there. I'm pretty sure, actually. I don't remember for sure, but I'm pretty sure there's more source material.
Yeah. Maybe second season, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, it's years later, but that's fine. Yeah.
And that happens.
Let's get that second season going.
Totally happens.
Tell all your friends.
Yep. You need to see Akane. She's super lazy.
She's funny. And she's likable. She's super lazy, but yet still likable in her own lazy, shiftless sort of way, you know?
Yeah.
All of the characters are likable. It's a great show. I'm not supposed to be talking about it because I didn't even watch it this season, but it sounds like I'm hopefully just echoing what you're saying.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, that's it. Go watch Flying Witch. Peace out. No, just kidding. This is the ending. This is where I say things and you listen to them. Unlike anime, UMLIKEANIME. All the socials, yada, yada, yada. YouTube, Instagram, yada, yada, yada.
Patreon. Love you.
Oh, yeah. Love you. Bye.
Bye, guys. Thank you.